The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, perhaps a little bit because it's also Valentine's Day and other and variety of things that I've been thinking about. What I had in mind this morning was to talk a little bit about something that could be connected to positive emotions, like love. And then at some point, prepare the ground, did a little talk, and then have you break into small groups, about four, to discuss what I'm going to bring up here. And one of the things I would like to do is to introduce you to a new emotion. Or an emotion, maybe it's not new, hopefully it's not new, but an emotion which has newly been identified or named. I read in a book recently, and that's a new name. Never knew that. So maybe some of you find this interesting. So yesterday I was, the other day I was given a small book on loving kindness practice, coming out of Burma, and I was reading through it, and there was some discussion about the practice of loving kindness, but there are also little anecdotal stories about people who practiced it and the results of that practice. And a lot of the results that were given in the book were good results for the practitioner of loving kindness. So whereas the loving kindness was to have kind, loving, goodwill towards someone else, they didn't say it in the book, but the kind of the implication was if you do that, you will benefit. Like there was an example of someone who had difficulty with a superior, like a work superior, and just sent a lot of loving kindness in the direction of that person, and after a while, the relationship shifted for the better for the person doing the practice. The interesting question here is love, loving kindness, goodwill, self-serving, or is it other-serving? And this wonderful interplay between being selfish and being selfless, being self-centered versus being altruistic. And sometimes people look at these things with a very sharp divide between these two directions. And I don't think it's so useful anymore or to consider these so separate from each other. And there's a wonderful interplay between them. And the fact that something benefits us that we do doesn't necessarily make it selfish. And the fact that we are helping someone else doesn't mean that we're not benefited from that also. And perhaps the separation or the connection between self and others is something that's very intimate. If we relax and allow ourselves to really feel or experience to be present for other people. And it doesn't make so much sense to make a sharp separation between people in certain ways. Now there's so many wonderful research studies done on positive emotions. And they're finding that, for example, when people are involved in helping others, that the reward and pleasure centers of the brain are lit up. So, who's being helped? I remember once, many years ago, helping a woman. We were hiking in the wilderness, in a kind of day hike, and had to climb over these big, difficult place to hike and climb. And I stayed behind to help her up over various places. And I remember I was surprised. I just felt so good. It just felt so right. Just wonderful feelings kind of coursing through my whole body. Just, I began wondering, am I helping her or helping myself? The emotion that I learned about from a research study, is called elevation. Ever heard of elevation? Any of you guys had elevation recently? Elevation, it's a term that he coined, named Jonathan height. And he says in his article that for many years, as a psychological researcher, he was studying the emotion of disgust. But at some point, he decided to look in the other direction. And so, in researching disgust, he'd noticed how people were disgusted by certain social behavior people had, like hypocrisy. But that the people also felt a certain kind of emotion when they witnessed somebody helping somebody else. So it isn't that you're helping or motivated to help, but rather witnessing someone else helping someone else, or witnessing a stranger helping another stranger. And that there's a certain feeling of elevation or a warmth, uplifting feeling, inspiration that comes with that. It does no benefit to the watcher at all, in a sense, you know, not directly. It's just kind of being observer of something happening out there. But somehow people can be touched and moved by that in significant ways. Such significant ways that they're inspired to feel goodwill. But even more important, or more interesting, is there also can arise a desire to act on that goodwill, to do something similar. So the article gives an example, quotes of someone who describes traveling in the winter someplace where there has been snowing, and with a group of people in a car, and the person was a passenger, and they were driving people back home, dropping them off as where they lived. And they passed a old lady who was out, looked like she was about to start shoveling her driveway from snow. And as they came up there or were passing, one person in the car said, oh, you can drop me off here. And the person who wrote about this said, you know, I assumed that, you know, he lived nearby and just wanted to save the driver extra driving time, just like he's going to walk the extra distance or something. But the person got out of the car there and went right up to the woman with a shovel and said, can I help you? And started shoveling. And the person in the car who witnessed that was so inspired, she said, that she felt like she wanted to sing or write a poem and wanted to tell other people about this. Can you believe it? He didn't even know this old lady. And he was just moved to do it. In the same article, he says that they did an experiment where they had people, I guess several sets of people, two groups of people, one group of people who watched a documentary on Mother Teresa, another group of people who watched, is it called America's Funniest Videos? Yeah. That was called? what's the different effect from watching these two videos? Certainly America's Funniest Videos, I suppose they're funny, and there's a certain kind of pleasure and joy that can come from being delighted by all this. But what's the long-term effect, or how are people motivated or moved depending on watching the funny video versus watching a documentary and someone who lives their life serving others and being altruistic? What gets triggered inside? Yes, what gets moved? And the people who watched Mother Teresa's documentary felt much more inclined to be helpful to others afterwards than the people who watched a funny movie. So that raises the question of if goodwill, if love even, is something that we have some control over creating the conditions for. Do we take responsibility for those conditions? Do we understand those conditions? Or do we just allow ourselves to be the victim of circumstances? So we say in English, you know, you fall in love as if, you know, you have no responsibility, as if you don't set up the conditions for it. And so, you know, what are the experiences you allow to come in, allow you to register for yourself? If you spend time watching documentaries like, you know, an altruistic people, it would have a very different impact than watching horror movies. And so do you, what do you choose? What do you choose to let be the input that you have? And these things are very deeply meaningful, I think, because of how deeply, I think, human beings are connected. So they're finding, for example, that there are a number of different mechanisms for compassion. And one mechanism, one way that compassion gets elicited, is cognitively, is by thinking out, oh, you know, that person's hurt, it'd be good to help them, I have a Band-Aid, I think I'll go help them. And it's partly just kind of a cognitive kind of thinking about and understanding logic. But the other is something that now is called mirror neurons, that there's something within us where there's an emotional response, where something inside of us, there's a resonance or an echo inside of us, a neurological echo of what someone else is feeling. You feel, you see someone in distress, you see someone happy, and it isn't just simply recognizing their state, but there's some kind of resonance that happens within us, that we pick it up, we're sensitive, we're aware of that. We kind of feel like ourselves, what they're feeling. And so the nerves that apparently do this are now called mirror neurons. We mirror someone else. So we're wired, in a sense, to be able to feel and connect to other people within ourselves, deep inside. There's a deep inner kind of mechanism for connection. And then I also learned another interesting term this week. I've known for a long time about the fight or flight response, and how people often talk about how in the fight or flight response there's a physiological activation that goes on in our body changes. So for example, often the heartbeat speeds up and the breath gets deeper or more contracted or something, but that changes. So we can fight better or run better. And there's kind of a, you know, we're kind of wired for that. If the mountain lion jumps in front of us, we're wired to have this, you know, deep, very useful response of fight or flight. So do you know what the opposite of fight or flight is? This is what I learned today, or this week. The opposite of fight and flight. It's, according to this researcher, approach and soothe. And you know what happens to the heart rate when we have the approach and soothe response? It goes down. And so if you see a baby in distress, you know, a parent sees a baby is distressed, the fight and flight response is not helpful. At least not for the baby. And so it turns out that, you know, that we're kind of wired, deeply wired to take care of each other, wired to sense and feel what's going on with someone else, and to be, you know, so deep that it's almost personal. And there's a desire and response that comes from that. And that part of that response is a physiological change. And a change that calls on us to approach and soothe, which requires us to be in a different physiological state than fight or flight. And then they say that this approach and soothe thing, like compassion, not only perhaps stimulates reward and pleasure centers of the brain, if it's done in a healthy, clean way, but also releases oxytocin into our system, this wonderful hormone that makes people feel really good. It's apparently, a lot of it gets poured into the body when women are giving birth, and when they're nursing their babies. Otherwise, why would they do it? So what I'm trying to say is that, you know. So here we are at you know, this day, Valentine's Day, which every year we celebrate love. And when I was a child, my memories of what Valentine's was about was you only gave a Valentine's card to a few people in your class, And it was a request that they be your Valentine. Ring a bell to people? I don't know. That's what I remember. And now I have kids at school. And now they're told, like my younger kid, it was told, you can bring a Valentine's card to school today for Valentine's Day, but you have to bring a card for everybody in the class. And there was nothing, my son knows nothing about this thing about asking someone to be a Valentine. It's just a kind of expression of goodwill and kind of to someone else. And so this idea of self and other, being selfish and being selfless, comes into play, I think, with love as well. And I'll present it this way. In my observation of people who become spiritually mature, it seems to me that all of them have one of the things they have in common is a movement, a desire, almost perhaps a need to love, but not to be loved. Isn't that something? For all the people who are constantly looking for someone who can love them. Perhaps as we kind of settle and relax and become more at peace with ourselves, that gets transformed, and being loved doesn't matter as much as being able to love. And to be able to love means we have to be present and sense and feel. And perhaps it's if we relax enough and are open enough, undefended enough, where we kind of yield to the world and really feel it, that the deeper biological mechanisms of being connected to each other in beautiful ways has a chance to operate. But if we're tense and busy and defended, then these deeper mechanisms can't operate that helps make connection, but rather the mechanisms that create separation operate. And so which of the biological mechanisms, biological instincts, do we let operate? The ones that create separation or the ones that create connection? And a lot of that has to do with what conditions we create for ourselves, what we allow to kind of operate within us. So that was supposed to be my brief words. So elevation. So the feeling uplift, that inspiration that can come when we witness someone else helping another person. So I would very much like now, those of you who don't flee, to form little groups of four, and for you to share in your group four, yeah, maybe four I think is good. If you could share in your group, what experience, or what you know, what you've experienced, in this thing called elevation. Have you ever experienced elevation? And you never heard the term before, but now, you know, hopefully you felt it somehow, that you've witnessed someone else being helped by a third person, by someone, not you, but just witnessed, and it had a deep impact on you, useful acting. And what was that like for you? Don't spend a lot of time with a long story, but say just enough and just share what it was like for you, how that changed you, in what ways were you changed. Perhaps you can think of an event that really did change you, if you can think of that. So is that okay to ask you to do that? So then, I'd like to do that for a little while, and then I'd like us to come back, and we're going to finish up together as a group. So probably do this for about 10 minutes or so. So if you could just turn around near you and find, or go somewhere and find three other people. So did you appreciate learning about a new emotion? Expanded your vocabulary? Elevation. So mostly I want to hear a little bit from some of you. We have about 5 minutes. I'd like to hear any comments you'd like to make about what you came out, what surprised you about your discussion, what's some insight or understanding you have about elevation or something.
one of the interesting things that struck me was that in two of the four examples, the most striking feature was people trusting each other, strangers, complete strangers trusting one another. And then these, the feeling of elevation eventually arising from that. These were situations in which people could have theoretically been harmed or property damaged or that kind of thing. And that really struck me.
Thank you.
The polite driver syndrome. If you see a polite driver out there, you're going to be a more polite driver. Pass it on. This is great.
The discussion in our group was tremendously satisfying. But I actually had a question for you. I was wondering, of course, this is something I've thought a lot about, if we could apply the same concept to the role of art, and I'm thinking in particular with composers such as Bach, who always composed with the ego completely removed and with the idea of uplifting people. I think with such experiences, one can have the feeling of uplifting and wanting to share that beauty with other people.
I think so, yeah. As opposed to you can get it if you really want. That doesn't inspire us maybe so much. You know, there are songs that clearly express more selfish desires. They don't uplift. In the same way, it might inspire people to put a lot of energy into acquisition, but it doesn't necessarily inspire an open heart. Yeah, I think art can do that. Yes, Carla.
In our group, we had four very different examples, and I was struck by how many things could create a feeling of elevation. One person, it was seeing evidence of great creativity in ancient times, like, wow, they did that. We humans are capable of so much. And another was seeing her son's eyes and connecting to that love. And another was the kindness of a grandmother. And for me, I felt such a sense of elevation from certain very uplifting movies and wishing my kids were watching more of those and less of the X-Men. So I was surprised by the range of our experiences that can create an uplifting feeling.
Great, thank you.
We were talking in our group how for some of us the feeling of elevation seems to be accompanied by a feeling of sadness or something that feels maybe physically like sadness. Mm-hmm. And we were just trying to figure out why that might be. Mm-hmm.
And was what you call sadness, was it satisfying? Is it satisfying, that kind of sadness? Is there a feeling of rightness to it?
A feeling of being moved.
In a rightful way?
I think so.
Feels right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so. I hope we feel sad sometimes. There's different ways of feeling sad, but you encounter something which is sad, I think feeling sad is appropriate. But there's so many different things we bring together with sadness. And some sadness is deflating or self-defeating sadness. And some, I think, is a beautiful or appropriate heartfelt response. And if compassion only made us feel good, that's the only thing that goes on, it probably is not compassion. But in addition to the feeling good, it hopefully comes with it when it's clean. I think there's also something uncomfortable. Also. Yeah.
I kind of got in touch with the parallel between what you describe as elevation and inspiration, and kind of came to mind with specifically Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. And just, I think maybe the emotion that you think is sadness is really just being deeply moved, in that, you know, here's a guy who did that presentation over 1,000 times, you know, just on his own dime, just him putting that out there. And we see that often everywhere, and, you know, and a couple of the folks use some actors and different people that have high positions where they really get out and they do things, and like this monk, you know, and these people that do these tremendously heroic things. And it moves us. I mean, we're, you know, that emotion, maybe we experience, it's not really sadness, it's maybe just a deep compassion or appreciation, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to the sadness thing because a couple of times in my marriage, Jeff has exhibited a lot more generosity than I did in a situation that I witnessed, and I really felt kind of, ooh, I felt sad because I didn't have that same feeling so immediately as he had.
So the sadness is not about the situation out there.
Right.
But the sadness is seeing that something about yourself.
That's right.
Huh? And that, you know, so again, I think that can be a healthy response, and it can be an unhealthy response depending how we hold it. If you hold it, it's kind of like, oh, I'm a terrible person. It's not so healthy. But if you hold it in such a way that inspires you to try to do better in the future, and you learn from that, then that sadness is hopefully beneficial. Makes you a better person. Okay, so thank you, and may you all be elevated. And so now there's tea. Those of you who'd like to stay and hang out and talk some more about this or other topics, it'd be great. And so thank you all.